Welcome to Techonomics on KGO 810. This week, host Jason Middleton has a far-reaching chat with veteran Silicon Valley reporter Peter Kafka about Gawker and the future of online journalism. And is Yahoo's story a cautionary tale for Apple? Maybe even Amazon? Then four health insurance companies have reduced their interest in Obamacare. Is it the bottom line or is it pure politics? And a massive new study touches everyone. The link between our genetics and clinical depression. All that and a little more is coming up next on Techonomics.
Welcome back, hopefully, to Techonomics. I'm at KGO Jason because I need more Twitter followers. We start this week with Peter Kafka, a veteran journalist covering media, digital media, and online journalism for Recode.net. First, we start with a chat about Univision's purchase of Gawker, a one-time online juggernaut brought low, as in bankruptcy low, by a billionaire-backed lawsuit brought by Hulk Hogan. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.
Peter Kafka, I'm a senior editor at Recode.net.
I'd like to start with your story from this week about Gawker, the aftermath of that and the auction of Gawker and Univision picking it up. So what was your major takeaway from that?
I mean, the big takeaway was this is the least bad outcome for Nick Denton, who owns Gawker, or did own Gawker Media, and his employees, you know, forced into bankruptcy because of the suit filed by Hulk Hogan, funded by Peter Thiel. At one point, I think they were hoping they could sell this company for $250 million, $300 million. They sold it for $135 million. That's the bad news. The good news is most people who work at Gawker are going to be able to have jobs. Mm-hmm. Still a debate about what's going to happen to Gawker.com, that specific website.
Right.
But if you're going to get forced into bankruptcy by a billionaire and a pro wrestler, this is the least bad outcome you could have.
I want to circle back on that for a second later. But Univision is actually adding a lot of content, a lot of journalism.
They're adding a lot of digital media. Broadly, this is obviously a Spanish language network that wants to go public. The theory seems to be they're going to add a bunch of digital media so when they go public, they can tell investors, we're not just a TV network. We're a broad-based, multimedia, multi-platform company. And look at all this digital media we have. Look at all this reach we have. They were co-investors in Fusion with ABC. Uh-huh. ABC wanted out of that business. Univision said, we'll take the rest of it. Uh-huh. They own a big chunk of The Onion. They own The Root, an African-American-themed website, and now they own the Gawker Media property. So now it looks like they've got a big portfolio of digital stuff.
They can sell multi-platform and on the big screen.
That is the argument. You know, these things, the multi-platform is pretty hard to pull off. Generally, people are either a TV network or they're a digital network. A lot of people want to combine both, and we haven't really seen a successful example of that yet.
So you don't think NBC Universal's approach, which is multi-platform, has been working so far?
Well, NBC Universal is first and foremost a cable network and a broadcast network, and they've invested in companies like BuzzFeed and invested in companies like Vox Media, which owns me. But they're, by definition, a TV network. That's where their bread is butter. They're sort of hedging their bets and figuring out how do we transition one day to digital media.
Yeah, and you used the food analogy. I worked for a media company that was based in Denver who used to tell me the newspapers are the steak and you guys, the digital, you're the salt and pepper.
Yeah, or you could sometimes you say that the digital stuff is the sizzle if you want to sort of sell that to investors. CBS during the last boom spent about $2 billion on CNET, which at the time was its dominant digital publisher. CNET's still doing okay, but whenever CBS has an earnings call, whenever they're talking about what the future of that company, they're never talking about their digital properties. They're talking about TV.
I don't want to get too off topic, but using your analogy there, it seems like pushing things to Hulu or other over-the-top kind of services might be a source of revenue for these broadcast networks or TV networks.
Yep, but it's also still a channel conflict because they'll say, we want to be where the audience is. We want to go digital. We want to find our audience on whatever screen they want. But they don't want to disrupt their primary business, which is selling ads on TV and or selling subscriptions to linear TV. That's the thing that makes the engine go today, and they're not going to cut that off. And this is the problem that every media company has when they're trying to face the future. And frankly, it's every company has this sort of idea of can we really disrupt ourselves? We say we want to disrupt ourselves, but to truly disrupt ourselves, to truly create a business that's going to work in a digital future 5, 10, 15 years from now, fundamentally, we've got to blow the thing up that we're doing today, and no one really wants to do that.
So Gawker goes to Univision. Is there a lot of activity in the mergers and acquisition space right now?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of – depends on your perspective on this. If you're a buyer, you're saying it's opportunistic buying. If you're a seller, you might say it's capitulation. These are companies like we saw Jet.com launched a year ago. It was supposed to take on Amazon. Right. Sold to Walmart for $3 billion. It's a lot of money. It's not what Jet.com wanted to do a year ago. It wanted to be this giant multi-billion dollar business.
Amazon competitor.
That was going to take on Amazon. That's not happening. Now they're going to be an arm of Walmart. You're seeing a bunch of deals like that happening. I think Gawker's kind of in that category. Uh-huh. And again, sort of depends on your perspective. You might say this is a lot of companies in the digital side saying, we've reached the end of the rope. It's going to be hard to find more funding. We've got to sell. That said, I was talking to a VC this week who said, this is a great sign. It means there's a lot of activity. We've got exits. We're going to start ramping up our investments now,
right,
because we think there's finally a light at the end of the tunnel here.
I think from the digital side, specifically Walmart and Jet, they were up against a buy versus build situation. So they were lagging, starting to lag a little bit behind, but they were lagging behind Amazon too much, and that's why they got Jet. Is that a fair play?
Basically, I mean, they've been lagging behind Amazon for years, and the question is, can a company that, and remember, we're describing Walmart like there's this old fuddy-duddy company, and they are old, but for a long time, Walmart was considered state-of-the-art retail distribution, just-in-time distribution. These guys knew precisely when they were going to run out of this kind of detergent, this kind of blouse, and they could get it there to the store and at price efficiencies that would crush the competition. All of a sudden, Amazon springs up, does this all digitally. They can't keep up with it. They've been trying for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually tried to buy the company, the first company that the Jet.com founder made, which was Diapers.com. Amazon bought that instead.
Huh.
They wanted to work with this guy for a while. And they've been trying internally to say, all right, how can we keep up with Amazon? How can we do it? How can we build? So now they're spending $3 billion in part to buy Jet.com, but really to buy the founder, Mark Lurie. They're going to put him to work for many years and say, figure it out for us.
In addition to being a platform they can add on, it's an acqui-hire in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I really do think it is an acqui-hire. They made a point of saying this guy is locked up for many years to come.
Wow.
He's going to be working here for many years. It's not just a guy selling his company to a big company, and then he's going to be gone in 2 years.
Right. Maybe a great play for the founder, maybe not a great play for the investors in Jet, though.
You know what? The investors are still happy because they put in, I think, $800 million. I'm not the best guy to ask about this. My colleague Jason Del Rey covers this. But they put in less than $1 billion, and a year later, they get $3 billion.
Yeah, okay.
That's a positive return. They're all going to be happy to take it. It's not what they wanted long-term. On the other hand, the long-term deal would have meant them going year after year, pouring more money into this company, Jet, which is going to lose money for years.
Right.
In the hopes of a much bigger payoff.
Okay. That's fair enough. A fiscal event for Jet.com. I want to pivot a little bit to consumer electronics, if we could, and what you're seeing there when it comes to apps, a little bit of usage downturn, it seems, on apps right now. And there's kind of an argument, and I don't think it's too esoteric anymore. I think it's apps versus bots in a lot of ways as to where the developers are turning their attention.
Right. So one thing that's gone on is the app boom is over. And I get angry comments and tweets about this when I say that. But people are still downloading apps.
Yes.
They're just not downloading them at the same rate. Most people have all the apps they want. There are lots of businesses based on trying to push apps in front of people to get them to download it. But you got to spend a lot of money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so most people aren't downloading apps. They're not going to the app store to check out apps. So it's hard to get new software in front of people. And everyone's going to say, wait, what, Pokemon Go? Yes, Pokemon Go is the
Spike.
Example that proves the rule. Yes, you can have a fantastically viral app like that, by the way, backed by billions of dollars of promotion and
development
and IP, right? There aren't a lot of other games like that. So you've got this scenario where it's harder and harder to push new software to people. And so one argument you've been seeing for a while is, oh, we'll do it through bots and messaging, and people are using things like GChat and Facebook Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what we're going to do is shove our apps in there on the sly. We're going to call them bots.
Right.
And that's how we're going to reach new people with our new software.
Market saturation for apps, maybe. And then parsing those apps and putting them on bots like Facebook Messenger comes to mind, because now you can do payments with Facebook Messenger.
Yeah. The problem with all this is it sounds good if you're a developer. It sounds good if you're someone funding one of these companies. You're saying, how is 1-800-Flowers going to reach people, because they're not going to download our app. Turns out they were never going to download your app. Or shove that app inside Facebook Messenger. But if I'm chatting with you on Facebook Messenger, I'm not looking to buy flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is the problem. This is one of the problems that chat and IM and email has always had. Huge user base. It goes all the way back to Gmail. Seems like a great place to shove ads in front of people. But you don't want to see ads when you're emailing someone or chatting someone. You're not going to – you don't want that ad intruding on that conversation, and you're not going to look for that product. So it's – I'm not sure that it's going to solve the problem people think it's going to solve.
We're speaking with Peter Kafka. We've wanted him on the show for a long time. We're happy he's here. I'm smart enough to know when I don't know something. So what did I miss that you wanted to talk about today?
I think the media beat has always been fascinating. It's particularly good the last couple of years, because you're finally seeing the TV networks, which for a long time seemed impenetrable, even as you saw music, newspapers, all these other industries getting really fundamentally changed by technology. The TV guys stayed sort of impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're finally starting to see them go, hey, wait a minute, where'd our audience go?
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I tried to blame Nielsen, and now it's quite clear. We know where their audience is going. They're playing Pokemon Go. They're on Facebook. They're doing a million other things. They might still be watching TV, but they're spending less time on TV. And so the TV guys for the first time are saying, all right, what are we going to do here? Which
All right.
is a great story.
All right, we'll follow up with you. Thanks for coming in, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
I was speaking with Peter Kafka. He's senior editor at Recode.net. Now, since we recorded our interview, Gawker.com will no longer cease to be. The site will assign its staff to other properties within Gawker Media, which runs six other sites, including Gizmodo, Deadspin, and Jezebel. Mr. Kafka also has an interview with Gawker's first writer and editor, Elizabeth Spires. Now, for that story, we have a link on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Coming up after the short break, we'll look at Yahoo and what lessons it can provide to maybe Apple, maybe even Amazon. Iterate or die, as they say. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.